You are now listening to the Willing Broom Sydney NAACP podcast. I am William Weston, the Vice President and Communications Chair.
And I'm Samantha Whitfield, President of the Branch.
Oh, how are you doing?
I'm good. How you doing, Will?
I'm doing well.
Good, good. Glad to hear it.
So, President Whitfield, let's just get into the episode.
400 years ago this year was the first time enslaved Africans were brought to the shores of North America.
These enslaved Africans were described as 20 and odd Negroes in a letter written by John Ralph to Sir Edwin Sandys in the year 1619 or 1620.
So we thought that it was important to acknowledge this anniversary. In August of this year, NAACP leaders, members, and partners journeyed from Jamestown, Virginia to Jamestown, Accra, Ghana, in West Africa to commemorate the year of return. This was a once-in-a-lifetime trip that honored the strength, power, and resilience of Africans and African Americans in the United States. So this episode will talk a little bit about that trip. But before we get into that, let's talk about 1619 itself in the year. The New York Times has a 1619 Project initiative that they have posted on their website and is also a podcast which goes through the journey of Africans in the United States as well as throughout the time period that we have been on this soil. So there's a bunch of great articles and podcast episodes that go through music, health, land, and the land episode of the podcast was one of my personal favorites. Not just being on the land, working the land, building the land, and owning the land and having that ownership stripped away. So that was a really powerful episode for me.
Yes, that land episode, which was a two-part episode, had how the land empowered Black people, but also what's happening now, how they aren't supported and that land is being taken away. So if you would like to take a listen to that podcast, it's called 1619 and is produced by the New York Times.
But other than that, talking a little bit about the year of the return, we had the honor and privilege of speaking with NAACP's very own Vice Chairwoman of the Board, Karen Boykin Towns.
And we began the interview by asking the Vice Chairwoman how the trip came about.
The trip came about because last year, their president was here in the U.S. and made the declaration that 2019 would be the year of return. Mm-hmm. And we all got captured by that idea. And then the president and some of his staff members went over and met with the vice president of the country as well as their tourism authority to talk about what the year of return would look like, and was encouraged to have the NAACP bring forth a delegation. And when the president got back, he, the chairman, and I sat down and started talking about what this could look like. And they, meaning the Ghanaian government, recommended the Adinkra Group to be a good partner for us, and that's how it got started.
Was the delegation just NAACP, or were there other people who joined NAACP?
Well, it was pretty fascinating. There were close to 300 people as part of the delegation, and some were members, but a large majority of them were not. They were people who either got the email and they heard about it and thought it would be a great opportunity, but most of them were not necessarily members of the association.
Oh, great.
Everybody on the trip was important, but we did have Danny Glover, and we had former member of Congress, Kendrick Meeks, and former ambassador, Diane Watson. But it was a very diverse group of people. They range in ages from 4 to 90, all there to retrace steps and commemorate the year of return.
and 300 people traveling across the seas all together must have been such an incredible feat to accomplish.
Yeah, the Adinkra group did a great job, certainly in organizing everything. And our plane out of Dulles, we were on South African Airways, and it was literally a soul plane because it was all of us, and the crew actually were Black as well. And so it was pretty cool.
So in the trip, it was surrounding the year of return, and we saw the itinerary. So there were a few dinners and sessions, tours, and other things. What was the most impactful event for you during the trip?
So, you know, we started in Jamestown, Virginia, which was a very, very moving day where we commemorated the 1619 Project. And I had never been there before. I don't know if you've been.
No, I haven't.
Just being in Jamestown, Virginia at the visitor center and touring that and learning about Angela and the slaves that came there was really a powerful moment. And we were told the story by a National Park Service official who happened to be an African American. And we had a tribute to our ancestors where we wrote messages and put them in the fire to commemorate them. And after that, the next day, there were some people that were able to go to the National Museum of African American History before we left for Ghana. So didn't want to forget that part of the trip because it was Jamestown to Jamestown, Jamestown, Virginia to Jamestown, Accra, Ghana. And, you know, it was really an amazing journey. And actually talking with you and Will today is helping me to relive a lot of that trip because, you know, it was action packed. There was a lot of emotion filled with it.
No, and we appreciate being able to hear the experience. I know, especially lately, there's been a lot more people who have been traveling to countries in Africa rather than going to European countries. So it's really great to hear some of the stories of people who have gone to African countries and their experiences while there to encourage others to go and patron the place where we come from and originate. And hopefully this episode will encourage some people to schedule their own trip to go and visit.
Well, definitely. Certainly 2019 is the year of return. There have been a lot of delegations that have gone over, but the president of the country, President Akufo-Addo, indicated that we were the largest delegation that has come thus far this year. And I think we will be, by the end of the year, we'll still be the largest at close to 300. But to go this year is a very special year. But I think, like you said, to go at any point in time is important. And there's a lot of rich history. And I tell you, there's parts of the trip that I still haven't been able to fully wrap my head around because they were so moving, so powerful, and really kind of just hard to digest, quite frankly.
Yeah.
Did they have any records of the individuals who were part of that first ship to land at Jamestown, Virginia?
Yes, they had various displays and stories about the 20 odd that did land there. Yes. Just going to Jamestown, Virginia. Now, we went in August and it was hot, to say the least. Mm-hmm. But that's something that I would definitely want to go back to, most definitely. You know, just to note that when we left out of Washington, most of us left out of Washington. When we arrived in Accra, it was actually on the day exactly 400 years thereafter when the first slaves were brought to America. So just that in itself was just like, wow, to touch down in the country, you know, 400 years later, where we were welcomed by dancers and drummers and local residents. I mean, it was so festive and there was so much excitement. It was really like a homecoming, and everyone like welcomed us home. It was so moving. And, you know, after leaving the airport, we went to the Jubilee House, which is the office and residence of the president. And there we had, you know, a photo op, and security is security. But we were able to have our like 7 coach buses drive onto the property of the Jubilee House and get out in front and like line up and have our picture taken. And it was just a really special moment. You know, I'll never forget, you know, arriving there and just what that feeling was like. And listen, I've been to Ghana two other times, but it was never nothing like it, anything like this.
Just mind-blowing and amazing. And I can only imagine the energy that was there on that day when you got off the plane.
Yeah, for sure. Wow. For sure.
I guess what was the most interesting thing that you learned throughout the trip, either about Ghana or about Jamestown, Virginia, through the experience? What was the most interesting fact or thing that you discovered?
Well, I don't know how long we have, but there was a lot. I think from the business summit, President Johnson and I, we were able to meet with the head of the bank before the summit began. And it was really interesting. You know, he had been educated outside of the country, and, you know, he came back to be able to contribute to the growth of, you know, his nation. And a lot of the people that we met were, you know, educated in London or here in the States, but they have come back because of the opportunities that there are in Ghana. They're building a society that, you know, they are focused on, you know, being healthy and inclusive and sustainable and empowered and resilient. And they were drawn to come back home to really be a part of that. And they were encouraging us to come home, to view Ghana as a place where we could, you know, come and engage in commerce and, you know, live a really terrific life. I think what I was taken with was just the focus that they have in building the country. They're the second largest economy in West Africa.
Wow.
And with all of the opportunities that are emerging in Africa, you know, Ghana is poised to be the one to spearhead that development. So there's a lot of energy. There's a lot of opportunity to really do well and help with that growth that they see before them.
Yeah. In terms of maybe obstacles that they're encountering there, especially with business development and labor markets, do you see any similarities between Ghana and the U.S. in struggles or obstacles?
Well, I think that one of the struggles they outlined was really getting the message out that it is, you know, a country that is prosperous. You know, they have, I don't want to say riches, but they have, besides a diverse and robust economy, they're rich with resources like gold, cocoa, and oil. Mm-hmm. And, you know, their economy is one where they are dealing in pharmaceuticals, they're dealing in textiles, and I think for them, one of the obstacles is really getting the message out that they're open to, you know, do business and, you know, have the resources in which they're not necessarily just looking for aid. They're looking to really be trading partners and the like, and to increase from where they are.
Yeah. With you saying that, I definitely see that happening in the Black community in the U.S. Yeah. is it's not necessarily looking for aid. It is looking for the opportunities to be able to build our own businesses and develop our own markets and create our own generational wealth to help sustain families and communities.
Absolutely. The President Johnson and I, along with a few others, I should note that we first met the president of the country when we arrived. We saw he was at the DeBar, the festival that we were at, and we met him then. And then a very small group of us the next day was invited to his residence for dinner. Mm-hmm. And my goodness, you know, I try, you know, not to be impressed by a lot, but this was like a state dinner. It was absolutely incredible to be, you know, in that smaller group, being able to talk about the issues of the day that he's dealing with and that, you know, his vision, which is a very, very powerful one. And to be in that midst, you know, it took everything. I did snap a few pictures, but
gotta get their selfie in there.
we did get to take a picture with him, of course, afterwards. But you know how you want to take a picture of your plate and
yeah,
you know, all that kind of stuff. But it was really a privilege and an honor, and I'm really, really pleased that since returning, President Johnson has had meetings with the ambassador to Ghana to really continue conversations of how we can work together and how we can be supportive of their efforts. And so that was something that was enlightening, informative and whatnot. But I would just say the visits to, I don't think I've still been able to shake the visit to the Cape Coast slave castles. That was, throughout the trip, you know, I was posting on my Facebook and my Instagram page, and there's a lot there. I still have not put up the pictures from the slave castles. That was so disturbing. To talk a little bit about it, when we got to the Cape Coast, we were welcomed by the chiefs at the local palace, and that was, you know, an honor to meet the leaders. And we got to hear from them, and it was wonderful. But the mood turned significantly. And oh, I should note that when we were there, we walked into Obama Hall. Yes, President Obama. When he and the First Lady was there, they were in that very same place and met with the local chiefs. But then, you know, we walked to the castles where, you know, our ancestors suffered in dungeons, and the mood turned as we kind of made that trek. And it was painful. It was really palpable, just the emotions that everyone had there. And we hung on to the words of the guides, like, just, I mean, I can't even really describe it, but to go into these dungeons where there's no light, and to know that there were like 1,000 men in one space, there was no facilities for them to go to the bathroom, and just to know that they were crushed in there in their own feces. And I mean, it was just too much.
Yeah. Yeah, it's just, I did see some of the photos that Tiffany Dina Lofton posted on the Youth in College picture, and it did look like it was just such an indescribable experience being in that space, touching those walls and just being able to imagine what it was like there and seeing the door of no return, especially, is probably just.
Going through that door. But the thing is that now there's the door of return, and there were tears, literally, when, you know, the guide was telling us that, yes, when our ancestors came through, it was the door of no return, and they did not return. But here it is, 400 years later, that we've come free, we've come with, you know, achievements. Yes, there's so much work to do, but we are their best hope, right? We are what they dreamt about. And now we get to return. And, you know, it really was emotional.
Oh, I just got chills when you said that. Wow. Yeah, as definitely on my bucket list to get over there and just experience it.
There were so many different elements to the castle that we visited. When it was over, we kind of, there was the ancestral reveal. So the NAACP partnered with AfricanAncestry.com, mm-hmm. and many of us had done the swab so that we could participate in the reveal. So, you know, your heart is heavy. You know, been crying, your eyes are red. And so we sat outside in this space, you know, outside on this property, where we then got to learn where our ancestors came from. And so it was a wide range of places, you know, Cameroon, Togo, Gabon, Guinea-Bissau, Sierra Leone, Liberia, Senegal. But it was at the very end when there was a family from Maryland, and it was revealed that they were from Ghana, and everyone was cheering and crying because it was just so special that, you know, here they were, where their ancestors had come from.
Wow. That is so amazing to have. I can only imagine the emotion in that space. It just seems.
And I feel it now. And oh, and I learned that I came from the Dakar people in Cameroon. So, you know, that means that I'm going to have to visit, but also do a lot of research to find out about my ancestors. So that was really, really special.
No, absolutely. And AfricanAncestry.com, that's a Black-owned DNA tracing group.
Yep. Yep. And one of the founders was there. I think she was the chief scientific officer, and she was there doing the reveal. And, you know, a lot of us have done ancestry.com. Mm-hmm. And she was funny to kind of talk about the difference because, you know that you have some African heritage, but AfricanAncestry.com is able to pinpoint the tribe that you're from. And it goes much, much deeper based on the rich collection of data that they have. So I would encourage everyone that is interested in their ancestry. And if you've done Ancestry.com, that's cool, but you want to do AfricanAncestry.com because that is where you really get a clear depiction of your ancestors and where you come from.
Awesome. I will
definitely not be doing that. Not a plug or a promo for the Marine.
Yeah.
But it is something to do.
No, absolutely. And I guess just to start to wrap up our interview, I just wanted to ask you, with the year of return, what does the year of return mean to you, especially going on the trip and experiencing the Jamestown to Jamestown journey for yourself and arriving on the day? What does the 400 years year of return mean to you?
That's a great question. I think for me, I hadn't really thought about it, right? And I felt really blessed that when the New York Times did their 1619 project and like look to consume that information, it really helped me focus on sort of our history in a way that I really hadn't. And I think what I took from it all was just how incredibly strong our people are, how if our ancestors could go through all that they did, and we have been through so much, that during this time that we face, we will get through this. We have a lot of work to do. We have to come together, but this too shall pass, because we have been through so much, and to be there and to experience it the way I did personally, it really gave me, it just gave me hope. It gave me additional hope for how strong we are as a people and how we will see ourselves through this too.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Before I ask the last question, I know I've been dominating the mic, but I'm going to give Will the chance to ask.
Oh, Will's still there?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Right. I don't really have a question, just an observation. You know, the good thing about these podcasts is that we learn things as we researching, and is that 1619 is way before 1776. Like, just realizing that we were here before the country was founded.
Yeah. Is it Angela Rye who said we built this country for free?
Yep.
And boy, to like you said, to know that, you know, 1619 is before 1776, and wow. Right. Yeah, for sure.
So just last question. As you know, the podcast is called Stay in the Fight. And one of the things that we've just started doing is giving a reason at the end of the episode to stay in the fight. So what is any advice for freedom fighters you can give or that you have for people and to encourage and inspire people to stay in the fight?
It's hard, you know, it's hard because, you know, a lot of times you don't see the change that you believe should be happening. Everyone does not always agree, and you feel like you're putting out so much, but what does it really mean? What change is really happening? But I believe that you have to stand in the fight, because it is only by each one of us doing our small part, or a big part, but everyone doing something, that change will occur. And it may not be immediate, it may not be tomorrow, but it does happen. And if there's anything to be said about our ancestors, they stayed in the fight, right? Mm-hmm. They sacrificed everything. And, you know, with all the degrees and the resources that we have, there's no reason why we cannot stay in the fight to be able to, you know, ensure that our children and our children's children are able to have a quality of life that is better than ours. We are far from done. This society still is unequal in many instances. And it is important that we work together, that we come together, that we bring our resources together in which to be able to effectuate change. And it's not by giving up, and it's not immediate, but at the same time, it can happen and it will happen.
Yeah. And that just really brings to life the motto of the National Convention this year is
do it.
When we fight, we win. Well, thank you so much, Karen, for talking to us today. It was a pleasure to have the vice chairwoman of the board on our little podcast here out of New Jersey. So we just thank you so much for your time, and we look forward to and the initiatives and the work of the NAACP in the future and staying in the fight and getting more people to join the fight with us.
Thank you for the leadership that you're providing, and congratulations again on being in NextGen. It is people like you who make the NAACP, and it is those of you in your age cohort who are the leaders that will assume even bigger roles within the association. And I'm so grateful for the innovativeness and the courageous leadership that you provide at a local level, because the NAACP is only as good as the local leadership that we have. And we're really happy with what you guys are doing. And thank you so much for inviting me on the podcast. And I don't think it's a little podcast, because I see you're having some pretty cool people on, and I'm just happy to have been included. So thank you.
Yes, thank you. Yeah.
So we really appreciate Vice Chairwoman
Karen Boykin-Towns
coming on to our show, Stay in the Fight.
Yes. Thank you, Vice Chairwoman Boykin-Towns, for coming on our podcast. Yeah. It was a real pleasure to interview you and to talk about the NAACP's delegation that went to Ghana. Maybe we can do our own Ghana trip within our branch. That might sound cool. What do you think, Will?
Yeah, that's a wonderful idea.
Yeah.
And we can go mobile with the podcast.
Yeah. Oh my gosh, that would be so dope.
And you know that.
If you have any ideas for future episodes, we'd love to hear them. Shoot us an email at willingboronaacp@gmail.com. We'd love to incorporate you and your branch and the work that you do into the show.
Yes. And that concludes the return episode. Peace.
What's it, Beth? We're out.
Yes.